بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين والعاقبة للمتقين أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين ومن تبعهم بإحسان إلى يوم الدين أما بعد. In the name of Allah, the Most Merciful, the One who bestows mercy, indeed all praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may peace and blessings be upon our beloved Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, upon his family, companions, and all those who follow the guidance of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam until Yawm al-Qiyamah. And in this lesson, we carry on with our reading of the treatise which was authored by Sheikh Abdul Muhsin al-Abbad hafidhullah, entitled Rifqan Ahl Sunnati bi Ahl Sunnah, Gentleness, O People of the Sunnah, with the people of the Sunnah. And in this blessed treatise which he authored, he speaks about some of the problems which are occurring between Ahlul Sunnah, between the youth of Ahlul Sunnah, and he encourages the people of the Sunnah, those who follow the way of the Salaf, to have gentleness and leniency with each other and to avoid spying and backbiting and spreading rumors regarding each other. And in this lesson, we come to the chapter of Fitnatu Tajrihi wal Hajri min Ba'di Ahl Sunnati fi Hadha al Asr wa Tariqu Salamati minha, the tribulation of Al Tajrih and Al Hajr, or we could say Al Jarh wal Hajr, from some of Ahl Sunnah in this time, and the way of safety from it. And it is page 53 in your books. So in this chapter, and again we're not going to read everything, but we'll read from it, he's talking about a particular fitna, a particular trend, or a particular problem which is occurring and was occurring from a small group of people within Ahlul Sunnah, within the Salafis, a small group of people who are causing problems. And this is by At-Tajrih wal-Hajr. And the meaning of At-Tajrih is criticizing, and the meaning of Al-Hajr is boycotting. And then the author, he will mention وَطَرِيقُ السَّلَامَةِ مِنْهَا, how we can remain safe from this fitna. And of course, the word At-Tajrih or Al-Jarh, and also Al-Hajr, all of these are terms which are found within the Sharia. And the meaning of Jarh or Tajrih is to criticize a particular person. And this is a science from the sciences of Hadith, and it is called Al-Jarhu wa Ta'deel, the criticism and the praising of certain people or certain narrators. So in the days of the Muhaddithun, Al-Jarh wa Ta'deel, criticizing and praising, it was a science that the Muhaddithun studied. And they studied this science in order to criticize certain narrators of a hadith. So when it is said, for example, that this hadith is not authentic because Fulan, the narrator, he is weak in his memory, or he was a liar, or he's accused of lying, and so on and so forth, then all of this is jarh. All of this is criticizing a narrator. And when the ulama, the muhaddithun, they would say regarding somebody that he is thiqah, that he is trustworthy, he is adil, he has integrity in that which he narrates, then this is at-ta'deel, this is praising. And this is the origin of this science, al-jarh wa ta'deel. The scholars of hadith criticizing or praising narrators of hadith to tell us whether we should accept their hadith or we should not accept their narration. And it is still used today to a certain extent in courts, for example in Islamic courts, where a particular witness, his witness statement will be accepted or it will not be accepted. This is also considered as being al-jarh wa ta'deel. And also with regards to criticizing the innovators, although this isn't the asal of jarh wa ta'deel, but it also enters into it. So when a scholar praises another scholar because he's upon the sunnah, this is at-ta'deel. And when a scholar, he refutes and he criticizes an innovator, then this is al-jarh. And also al-hajar. Al-hajar is also a term from the sharia, and the meaning of al-hajar is boycotting. And the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, he is the one who legislated boycotting al-hajar. So he sallallahu alayhi wasallam, he boycotted his companions Ka'b ibn Malik and two other companions for 50 days and 50 nights because of a particular reason. And in the next lesson, bi-idhnillah, we'll talk about al-hajar, boycotting, and when it is allowed and when it is not allowed, and the different types of boycotting. So although both of these words, al-jarh and al-hajar, criticizing and boycotting, although they are from the sharia and they are legislated in the sharia, but the author, he's talking about when it becomes a fitna and people begin to recklessly criticize and recklessly boycott, and then this causes more harm to the da'wah and it causes people to flee away from the da'wah. And this is something he said, fi hadha al-asr, something that we have seen, and many of you will have seen and experienced this. And he starts by saying, حصل في هذا الزمان انشغال بعض أهل السنة ببعض تجريحا وتحذيرا. That in this era, it has occurred that some of the people of the Sunnah have occupied themselves with other people of the Sunnah in criticizing them and insulting them and warning people to stay away from them. So notice, this chapter, it is not regarding Ahlu Sunnah warning against the people of innovation, because the people of innovation, they are to be criticized, and the innovators, the heads of those innovators, they are to be warned against, so people can stay safe from them and not to be deceived by their innovations. So this is legislated, but the author is talking about this fitna which has occurred between some of the Salafis and between Ahlu Sunnah, in which they are boycotting and criticizing and being reckless with each other. And what did this cause? وَتَرَتَّبَ عَلَى ذَلِكَ التَّفَرُّقَ وَالْإِخْتِلَافَ وَالتَّهَاجُرَ. And this has caused division and differences and boycotting between each other. وَكَانَ اللَّائِقُ بَلْ مُتَعَيِّنَ التَّوَادُ وَالتَّرَاحُمْ بَيْنَهُمْ. However, that which is more appropriate, or rather that which is an obligation, is for Ahlu Sunnah to have mercy and love and compassion between each other. Even if one of them makes a mistake, then it is rectified with mercy and compassion and showing care for each other. And in this is the hadith of Nu'man ibn Bashir radiallahu anhuma in Sahih Bukhari and Muslim, that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, he gave an example of how believers should be with each other, especially when one of them makes a mistake. He said, مَثَلُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ فِي تَوَادِّهِمْ وَتَرَاحُمِهِمْ وَتَعَاطُفِهِمْ. That the example of the believers, when it comes to their love and concern and feeling for each other, كَمَثَلِ الْجَسَدِ الْوَاحِدِ, is like the example of a single body. إِذَا اشْتَكَى مِنْهُ عَضُ, that when a limb from the body feels pain, then the rest of the body has a fever and stays awake at night and is not able to sleep. So our bodies, for example, if your finger's hurting, it isn't the case that it is isolated to only your finger. Because of your finger hurting, maybe you won't sleep at night and you feel pain throughout your body and you're worried and anxious about the pain in your finger. And this is how the mu'minun, the believers, should be with each other. Because why? They are one ummah. So if one part of the ummah is hurting, then the rest of the ummah should also feel that pain. And Shaykhul Islam ibn Taymiyyah rahimullah, he has a beautiful statement in which he says that whoever is not pleased with what the mu'minun are pleased with, and whoever is not saddened by what the other believers are saddened with, then he is not from them. Why? Because the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, he likened us all to a single body. And especially amongst the people of the Sunnah, especially amongst the people of the Sunnah, that if we see a brother from amongst the people of the Sunnah, he falls into a mistake, we shouldn't rejoice at his mistake, but rather it should pain us that he's falling into this error. And therefore, we try our best in order to rectify this error. And as for merely criticizing and jarh and boycotting, and it is done in a reckless manner without an-nasiha, then this harms and this is a fitna. He said that which is an obligation upon Ahlus Sunnah is وقوفهم صفا واحدا في وجه أهل البدع والأهواء. That all of Ahlus Sunnah, they should stand together as one united force against the real people of innovation and the real people of desires, those who oppose Ahlus Sunnati wal Jama'ah. And what is the cause or the reason for this fitna? This fitna which has occurred now, in which the Shabab of Ahlus Sunnah and the Salafis are criticizing and boycotting each other. What is the cause? The author, Hafidhullah, he mentioned two main causes. The first of them, he said, أَنَّ مِنْ أَهْلِ السُنَّةِ فِي هَذَا الْعَصْرِ مَنْ يَكُونُ دَيْدَنُهُ وَشُغْلُهُ الشَّاغِلُ تَتَبُّعُ الْأَخْطَأُ وَالْبَحْثُ عَنْهَا. That some from amongst Ahlus Sunnah in this time, their whole occupation and that which they're busy with themselves with is following up the mistakes of others and investigating the mistakes of the others and checking the books of people and the cassettes of people, almost waiting for other people to make a mistake. And as soon as they see a mistake, then they jump on that person. And this isn't the way of Ahlus Sunnah. Rather, we always have husnul dhan regarding each other. We always have good thoughts regarding each other, and we always give benefit of doubt between each other, Ahlus Sunnah. And if a mistake becomes apparent, then we advise that person. But as for searching for the mistakes of the people and looking through books and cassettes and articles and finding if there's a mistake and then bringing it out, then this is not from the manhaj of Ahlus Sunnati wal Jama'ah. He said that they search for these mistakes, and then if they find something, ثُمَّ التَّحَذِيرُ مِمَّنْ حَصَلَ مِنْهُ شَيْءٌ مِنْ هَذِهِ الْأَخْطَى. And then straight away start warning against that person. Somebody made a mistake, immediately start warning against him, without looking at what the benefits of you warning against him, what are the potential harms of you warning against him. Are you a minority in your country or your town? Are you a majority? Are you in a state of weakness? Are you in a state of strength? And so on and so forth. So as an example, in a town, for example, you have 10 different masajid. And 9 of these masajid are the people of innovation, from amongst the people of shirk and khurafat and bid'ah and desires and so on and so forth. And in this town, with 9 masajid which are like this, there's one masjid which is closer to you upon the sunnah. And this masjid, it is upon Tawheed, and there aren't major errors in Aqeedah, and maybe some errors occur from them every now and again. Is it from hikmah, from wisdom, and is it from aqal, is it from intelligence, that a person, he places all of his emphasis on this one masjid, which is the closest to you upon the sunnah, which is upon Tawheed, upon Aqeedah, doesn't have major innovations, and maybe every now and again they will fall into some mistakes, even if they fell into some minor innovations. And yet, as for the other 9 masajid, then no attention is paid to them, and nothing is said regarding them. This isn't from Aqal, and this isn't from Al-Hikmah. And then the author, he gives an example, and Wallahu A'lam, but the author, it seems that he was muwaffaq, he was guided in this example which he gave, because this example which he gave, it is one of the main reasons why these warnings and this fitna occurs between the people. And he said that an example is a particular da'i, a particular talib al-ilm, a particular scholar, he will go and give lecture with a particular jam'iyyah, a particular masjid or a particular institute. He will go and he will give a lecture there. And maybe that jam'iyyah, maybe it has some mistakes. So then what do these people start doing? Because of that person going to that jam'iyyah, that masjid, in order to give a lecture or to give lessons, even though the person did not say anything wrong in his lectures, he didn't say anything wrong in his lessons, he doesn't agree with the mistakes that are there. In fact, maybe he's also privately advising them on his lectures and his lessons, he also speaks about their issues. Yet despite this, just because he went to that jam'iyyah or that masjid in order to give a lesson, then he's warned and boycotted and insulted and criticized. And the author, he's talking about a particular jam'iyyah, but he didn't mention the name of that jam'iyyah in one of the Arab countries. And he said that this jam'iyyah, he said, even a Shaykh Abdulaziz ibn Baz and Shaykh Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthameen, both of them, they would give lectures at this jam'iyyah. And they would give lectures over the phone at this institute or this place. And yet if anybody else goes, then those people are boycotted and warned against. And he mentions a principle. He says, وَاتِّهَامُ الْمَرْءُ رَأْيَهُ أَوْلَى مِنْ اتِّهَامِهِ رَأْيَ غَيْرِهِ. That a person should analyze his own opinion before analyzing the opinion of other people. Meaning, a person should suspect and accuse his own opinion that maybe I am wrong in what I am saying. Instead of accusing or being suspicious over the opinion of the scholars, especially when you have two great ulama like Ibn Baz and Ibn Uthaymeen who have set this precedent of going and giving a lecture in that jam'iyyah. And until this time, we find some of the mashayikh, some of our scholars, they will give lectures with that jam'iyyah, and other scholars, they don't give lectures in that jam'iyyah. But this doesn't mean that then those scholars, they start criticizing and boycotting and insulting those scholars who do. And the most that can be said is that it is a difference in ijtihad. That these two scholars, they have a difference in ijtihad in how they should deal with that jam'iyyah. And the same applies to this country and du'at going to various masajid, maybe masajid of those who are not upon the sunnah, or the masajid of the common Muslims that we find, that if you don't agree with them going there, that doesn't mean that their opinion is necessarily wrong. And neither is it something which is found as a text in the Quran or the Sunnah. Rather, this type of issue is open to a person's ijtihad. And the tulab al-ilm between them, each other, they have their ijtihad. The main thing is that when this person goes to that masjid, he doesn't agree with them on their mistakes, number one. And secondly, when he goes to that masjid, then his intention is to rectify the mistakes which are occurring in that masjid. How he does that, then that is open to his ijtihad. So whether he does it privately or publicly, or whether he does it in lectures or lessons, or he has a long-term vision, ala kulli hal, this is something which is open to a person's ijtihad. And just because of a person going to a particular jam'iyyah in order to deliver a lesson, or going to a particular masjid to deliver a lesson or a lecture, then this isn't enough to start boycotting the person and speaking about his honor and violating his status. And the author, he mentions that from amongst those people that this group of people they warned against are those people who have so much benefit in their lessons and so much benefits in their lectures and their books, and yet they are totally warned against. Why? Because he didn't speak about a particular person. What is wrong with this individual? He doesn't hold Fulan to be an innovator. What is wrong with this individual? Well, he goes to a particular masjid or a particular jam'iyyah in order to give a lecture. And this isn't sufficient. As long as you know that somebody is from Ahlul Sunnah, and this is an important point, that we are talking about somebody, a scholar, a talib ilm, who you know he is from Ahlul Sunnah. We're not talking about somebody who is majhul, somebody who we don't know, or his aqidah isn't known. Rather, somebody who is from Ahlul Sunnah, and he has knowledge, and he's from the scholars of the tulab al-ilm, and then he goes to that jam'iyyah, even if you disagree with him, this isn't enough for a person to warn against him, or boycott him, or to violate his honor. And the author, he called those people Qutta' al-Turuq. And the meaning of Qutta' al-Turuq are like highway robbers or bandits. It's as if they are preventing people who want to traverse a road in order to seek knowledge from a particular scholar or a particular talib al-ilm. They are preventing those people from benefiting from that person. And therefore they are Qutta' al-Turuq. They are like the bandits or the robbers who stand on the highway, and when somebody passes by them, they steal from them and they violate them. And then the second reason, the author mentions that the second reason why this problem has occurred nowadays is أَنَّ مِنْ أَهْلِ سُنَّةِ مَنْ إِذَا رَأَى أخطأ لأحد من أهل السنة كتب الرد علي. That if one from amongst أهل السنة he sees another person from أهل السنة and he makes a mistake, then he write a refutation against him. Straight away he writes a refutation against him. ثم إن المردود عليه يقابل الرد بالرد. And then the one who has been refuted, he then replies to him with another refutation. ثم يشتغل كل منهما بقراءة ما للآخر من كتابات قديمة أو حديث أو السماع لما كان له من أشرطة كذلك. And then both of them, they don't suffice with this. Then they start investigating the past books and the past cassettes and the past fatawa that each party has written. Maybe they'll find a mistake. And then when they find a mistake from maybe 10 years ago or 20 years ago, then they will bring it out. And this is also something which is strange, that these two people, they have known each other for 10, 15, 20 years. And for these years, there was never a problem amongst them. And now that the difference has come, they start mentioning things that are 20 years old or 10 years old. If this was truly an error, then why is it that at that time it wasn't highlighted or the person wasn't advised against? And it will be said, I've been patient upon this person for 10 years or for 15 years or for 20 years. And yet never was this person ever advised or sat with or the issue clarified or written about in the books. And so this is another reason which has caused this problem. Then each of them, they start replying and refuting each other and replying against each other's refutations. And then they start searching and investigating past books and past cassettes and past fatawa and then searching for mistakes. And also, وَإِلْزَامُ مَنْ يَلْقَاهُ بِأَنْ يَكُونَ لَهُ مَوْقِفٌ مِمَّنْ لَا يُؤَيِّدُهُ. And then, whoever each one of the party meets, they force that person to then have an opinion regarding the other individual. So they'll come to you, for example, they'll say, what's your opinion about that scholar, that talib al-ilm? And if you agree with him, then you are his friend. And if you disagree with him, and you say, I don't agree with what you say about him, or if you don't have an opinion, you say, look, I haven't looked into the issue, and I have no relevance to that person, and therefore I don't have an opinion, then they will give you nicknames, or they will put you along with that person. And also the principle that is mentioned, مَنْ لَمْ يُبَدِّعْ الْمُبْتَدِعْ فَهُوَ مُبْتَدِعْ. That whoever does not hold an innovator to be an innovator, then he himself is an innovator. This principle is, it is mentioned that whoever does not hold an innovator to be an innovator, then he himself is an innovator. And this is similar to the other principle, مَنْ لَمْ يُكَفِّرَ الْكَافِرُ فَهُوَ كَافِرٌ. That whoever doesn't hold a kafir to be a kafir, then he himself now becomes a kafir. This principle, it isn't correct in this absolute manner. If it is understood like this, that whoever does not hold a kafir to be a kafir, then he himself is a kafir, and whoever doesn't hold an innovator to be an innovator, then he himself is an innovator, it isn't correct in an absolute manner like this. Rather, it is correct with certain conditions or certain guidelines. And the conditions and the guidelines have been mentioned by a number of scholars, and Sheikh Al-Albani rahimullah, and Sheikh Ibn Uthaymeen, and Sheikh Fawzan, and also Sheikh Salih Sahimi, all of them, they have spoken about this principle. In fact, when a Sheikh Al-Albani, when this principle was mentioned to him, that whoever does not hold a kafir to be a kafir, then he is a kafir, and whoever does not hold an innovator to be an innovator, then he is an innovator, Al-Shaykh al-Albani, he said, وَمِنْ أَيْنَ جَاءَتْ هَذِي الْقَوَاعِدِ. Who's the one who's brought these principles? Where have these principles come from? So the correct stance with regard to this principle is that it isn't correct in an absolute manner, but it is correct with certain guidelines and certain conditions. So what are the guidelines for this principle? That whoever does not hold an innovator to be an innovator, then he himself is an innovator. The first condition or guideline is that original innovator that is being called an innovator, he has to have with him innovations. It has to be an innovation which he is upon. Like the innovations of the Jahmiyyah, or the Khawarij, or the Qadariyyah, or the Rawafid, or the Sufiyyah, and Shirk, and so on, and so forth. So when we're talking about that original innovator, who this person has refused to deem as an innovator, then the first conditional guideline is that person actually an innovator? Is he from the Khawarij? Is he from the Qadariyyah? Is he from the Murji'ah? Is he from the Jahmiyyah or the other sects and the groups which exist? Or is it just a difference which is between you people? And you will find that in the majority of the cases, the youth from Ahlul Sunnah, they are not differing about the Sufiyyah and the Khawarij and the Rawafid and the Qadariyyah. Rather, the difference is over issues of Ijtihad. Well, he was sitting with Fulan and this one walked with Fulan, and he used to attend the lessons of this person, and this one goes to this mosque to give lessons, and this is why he's being termed an innovator. So in the first place, this principle wouldn't apply, because that person you hold to be an innovator, he doesn't have innovations with him. And remember that not every mistake is an innovation, and not everybody who falls into an innovation becomes an innovator. لَيْسَ كُلُّ مَنْ وَقَعَ فِي الْبِدْعَةِ وَقَعَتِ الْبِدْعَةُ عَلَيْهِ. Not everybody who falls into an innovation, does the ruling of innovator fall upon him. Otherwise, there are many amongst the scholars, many amongst the scholars and the imams of this religion, and the author he mentioned in the last chapter, like Al-Imam An-Nawawi Rahimullah, and Al-Hafidh Ibn Hajar Rahimullah, and Al-Bayhaqi Rahimullah, and others in them. In fact, some from the Tabi'een and the Atba' al-Tabi'een, like Qatada, who fell into mistakes, and some of these Imams fell into an innovation, and yet we still say Al-Imam and Al-Hafidh and Al-Shaykh, and we still make dua for them, and we still benefit from their books. And every single one of us here will have benefited from the books of Al-Imam An-Nawawi Rahimullah. And the scholars to this day, they've referenced them and they respect them and they defend them despite certain issues that they had in certain aspects of Aqeedah. Especially in the issue of Iman and Tawheed Al-Asma wa Sifat, errors occurred from some of these Imams like An-Nawawi or Al-Hafidh Ibn Hajar or Al-Bayhaqi and other than them. Yet nobody ever said that these are innovators and nobody should read their books. So not everybody who falls into an innovation becomes an innovator. Not everybody and not every error is also an innovation. So this is the first guideline. The second guideline is that person who is being called an innovator, then he is an innovator. Meaning, he didn't just act upon that innovation once. Rather, this is his aqeedah, this bid'ah, this is his aqeedah. He calls to it, he defends it, and he refutes the evidences against this innovation, and he bases his alliances and his disassociations upon this innovation. Then we can say he is an innovator. However, if he merely fell into this innovation by mistake or by ta'wil, then we don't say straight away that he is an innovator. And then the third guideline is that innovator, we have to look that, is he making that mistake out of ignorance? He was ignorant and he didn't know and he fell into an innovation. Is he being forced and compelled into that innovation? Are there certain factors around him, which means that he has done that thing even if he didn't believe in it? Maybe there are certain factors why he did that thing, for a particular hikmah or in order to protect himself from a particular harm. So we have to check now, why did he fall into this innovation? Is it because he believes in the innovation, or was it merely some ignorance, a mistake, a slip up, or some events which are around him? And the fourth innovation is similar to what I mentioned previously. The fourth guideline is that this innovation which he has fallen into, he has gone against one of the major principles of the religion, one of the usul of the religion, like a major bid'ah, and not something which was minor or something which didn't take him out of the fold of a sunnah. And then The fifth guideline is that this person who you are blaming for not deeming that innovator to be an innovator, does he know he is an innovator? Does he know that he has fallen into this innovation? Because many people, even amongst the scholars, they might not hold somebody to be an innovator because they don't know that he fell into an innovation. Or they disagree that that which he fell into was an innovation. Or maybe they will say that he was wrong about this, but we don't consider his mistake to be so severe that it takes him out of the fold of Ahlul Sunnah. And then the sixth conditional guideline is that when you are applying this principle, you have to look, will it cause more fitna? Which is, will it cause a greater harm? So if it causes a greater harm or it causes a greater fitna, then you remain silent and you don't speak about it. Like I mentioned, for example, you have a town, and in this town you have 10 masajid, and one of these masajid is the closest to you, closer to the sunnah, and the other 9 are far away. If we start applying these principles and warning against this masjid and boycotting this masjid and not attending this masjid, then of course the harm which will arise is much greater than any benefit which will come. So we have to make sure that we weigh up the masalih and the mafatid. We have to weigh up the potential benefits and the potential harms against any warning or boycotting and the fitna which may occur. And then the seventh guideline is that you advise that person. Before you place a ruling on him, advise him, speak to him, give him the evidences, try to convince him, and maybe he has evidences with him which afford him not to make tabdi of that innovator. And the eighth condition, and of course this is the most important, is al-ikhlas. That a person has to be sincere. Even when you are warning against an innovator, you don't warn against an innovator because you want to become famous. You don't warn against an innovator because you merely want to expose a person. You don't warn against an innovator because personally you just don't like him, and therefore by warning against him, therefore this person will be dropped. A talib al-ilm or a scholar only warns against an innovator with the intention of protecting the Muslims and making sure that the other Muslims, they do not fall into this innovation. And then the author, he mentioned 3 matters in which he addresses those people who are warning and boycotting and criticizing Ahlul Sunnah. First of all, he says, "An yattaqi Allah," that they should fear Allah. They should fear Allah, and instead of occupying themselves with the mistakes of their brothers, then let them occupy themselves with their own mistakes. And this is something which is more worthy and more noble. That instead of concentrating and investigating day and night the mistakes of the others, then let the person investigate his own mistakes and his own weaknesses and where he has fallen short. And the second matter is, the second advice that the author gives them is, instead of a person occupying himself with warning against others and criticizing others and speaking about others, then focus on beneficial knowledge and focus on righteous actions, so you can benefit and you can benefit other people. So you can attain benefit from others and other people can attain benefit for you. And let every person who wants goodness, he said, أن يشتغل بالعلم تعلما وتعليما ودعوة وتأليفا. Then let them concentrate on seeking knowledge and teaching knowledge and giving da'wah and writing books. And this is something in which there is much more benefit. And then the third advice he gives them is that the tulab al-ilm in the various countries, instead of occupying their followers or their students with warnings and boycotting and speaking about individuals, let them occupy them with reading beneficial books. Reading beneficial books, studying the books of Ibn Uthaymeen, studying the books of Ibn Baz rahimullah, and so on and so forth. He said, instead of phoning so and so and asking, ma ra'yuka fi fulan wa fulan, what's your opinion regarding this one and what is your opinion regarding that one? And then the fourth advice he gives, and we'll finish with this advice, is that if and this was an advice which is specific for the scholars in Saudi Arabia, that if the scholars differ regarding an individual, then instead of them refuting each other, let them go to a lajna al-da'imah, the permanent committee of scholars, the major scholars of Saudi. And these major scholars of Saudi, they have a lajna, they have a committee in Riyadh. And this committee, it is called a lajna al-da'imah lil-ifta' wal-buhuth, the permanent committee for giving fatawa and for research and investigations. And when an issue comes to them, then they have a team of scholars who research this and they investigate this, and then they give a fatwa. So instead of individual scholars, all of them giving rulings, and then there's chaos and people are refuting each other, let them go to this committee, the committee of major scholars, and then the committee of major scholars, they can research and investigate and give a proper fatwa. And we'll suffice with this for this lesson. And in the next lesson, we'll go on to the rest of the chapter. And Allah knows best. Wallahu ta'ala a'lam wa sallallahu ala nabiyyina wa sallam. If there's any questions from the brothers or the sisters regarding the lesson today, then you're welcome to ask your question.